Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Tennis Channel Inside In on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Mitch Michaels, Santa Monica Studios, late night Wednesday. As we record this, we're time stamping it because the Australian Open is in full effect. 2024 edition, couple days in, a lot of drama, a lot of excitement, two podcasts each week. That's how you know it's a big deal. And bringing back my expert, Barstool Sports' Barstool Hubs, Eric Hubs on the show. Third time on the show, but this is the first time we've actually done it during a major, so we'll just let the takes and observations fly, but excited to talk tennis with you again.
Yeah, listen, you're in California, so it's 6 o'clock right now. It's 9 for me, and that's fine now, but once it's like 2, 3 in the morning, you have it so easy at that point where it's like, I have to decide if I want to ruin my next day at that point. Is this match good enough right now to ruin tomorrow? That's what I have to decide every night. It's a little easier tonight because my fiance, who's a night nurse, is not here. So I've got the whole apartment to myself. I can make as much noise as I want. I can have the TV loud free. But like some other nights, not so much. She's got to sleep, all this. So, you know, I'm in a conundrum here. I love this tournament so much because I am a night owl at heart. I just don't sleep. I didn't even know melatonin was a thing until 2 years ago. So like I had no, now I do. So I can knock out if anytime I want, but I used to just be up. Yeah. Like at all, it would just be, I'm just going to watch the Australian Open because I have nothing else to do right now. So no, but this is one of my favorite tournaments of the year. Obviously it's a Grand Slam. The first slam of the year after the month break that they get, which should definitely be longer. And that is definitely a discussion that is ongoing. But yeah, dude, I'm fired up.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, too, just as an aside to that, and I used to, you know, I was Eastern Central time zone. Are you at a point where you're maybe getting up early to see maybe if a match is still going on? Because I do remember one year, I think it was, and I've told this before, but Stan beat Djokovic the year he won his first, his only Australian Open, and I was in the Central time zone, and I woke up at like 7 Central time, and I'm like, this match is still going on. So there are times, I think, when you're on that time zone where you might get up a little early.
The match that I remember of recent memory is when – who was it? Who
beat Nadal Medvedev? Yeah.
Nadal Medvedev. Yeah. That's where I stayed up. And to see everyone I follow on Twitter wake up – I think it was a weekend or something. It was a championship. Of course it was. Yeah, it was the weekend. Yeah. To see them all wake up and then start like, you know – what is this match still going on? Like, they don't even watch tennis and they're watching. I'm like, yo, I've been here for 6 hours. Like, Medvedev had this in the bag 2 hours ago and we're still going here. But yeah, no, that happened the other day. What was the long match?
Felix team? Was it that one?
Yeah, that sounds right. I think I live bet team lost that. So just woke up and immediately lost money. That was fun. There was a few other ones. Yeah, there was one day for whatever reason, there was like a million five setters in one day, right? Yeah. So that's what pushed everything. But yeah, those are fun wake ups when you're just like, how is this possibly still going on?
That happened last year, Murray and Kakinakis. I woke up at like early on the West Coast and it was still going on, so I can only imagine. And I do think I want to say for the formal introductions, you've kind of been the one to introduce your cohorts and your friends to tennis. It just seems like every year you got to go to the U.S. Open, the group, and it's got to be the Hubs group. It keeps getting bigger and you keep introducing more people to the sport.
I love it. And I've yet to find someone that has like really bought in to like, okay, let's follow this a little bit. And they just are hooked. I'm not going to say I did that to Dave Portnoy. He kind of found his way in with Sabalenka, obviously.
That was perfect.
You know, and his gambling, habits, but, I took fights and Nate, 2 years ago, and we happened to see the best match of the whole tournament with Carlos and Sinner just going nuclear. And they were, if you didn't, you don't even have to like tennis at all, and you would enjoy that. So that was kind of like cheating. Like, I was like playing with steroids a little bit there. But yeah, I slowly but surely get more and more people in every single year, and it's beautiful to see. And honestly, you don't have to like just go to the U.S. Open on the Friday of Labor Day weekend. You will have a blast. It is my favorite day of the year. Pretty much, yeah, hands down, favorite day of the year. I never have a bad time.
I'd say the same thing. Like, just get someone who's not sure about tennis to the actual sporting event live, and they will probably be hooked. This year's Aussie Open, a lot to discuss. I guess we can start at the top down. You know, Novak Djokovic hasn't looked crisp as his normal standards, has lost a set in each of his first two matches. Was up against Popper, who could have won the third set and gone up 2-1. But, you know, there's talk of whether Hubs, he's battling an illness, which he said he's felt a little sore, all this stuff. But, again, I come back to, you know, they poked the bear last night. And if you're an Aussie fan and you've got your guy and you're rooting for him, I just don't know why history has taught us you're going to poke the bear and we see what happens. He just raises his level and smothers you.
It's genuinely like these people have never seen this happen. Like we said, the last time I came on, there was something, you know, this happens all the time. Mm-hmm. These people don't learn. No one learns.
No.
You're better off cheering for him if you want him to lose. Like you just are. I've now reached the point where either two things are at play. Because these people can't be that stupid. And I know it was an Aussie play. So they want to get behind their boy. Of course, he was playing well for two sets. I was like, whoa. And then obviously he almost, you know, he had him on the ropes a little bit. I'll put that in quotes because it was not like, to win the match. But two things are at play. Either one, there's Djokovic fans in the crowd who are smarter than everyone else who know, oh, they can see when he's flat. Let's cheer him on.
Oh, the plan.
Let's egg on him. Yeah. And we know we're, you know, we'll take the bullet, and then he's going to come back, and that's our boy, and we're going to basically will him the victory in our weird way. Or two, his team is not telling him they're doing this, or they're planting people in the crowd to do this. And then afterwards, like, they get a little hat tip, and they're part of, they get a little money. Novak doesn't know these people exist, but they instigate him to get him to go. It has to be one of those two things at this point because it's so automatic. It's so obvious. The moment you get under that guy's skin, he turned into a cyborg. He can go from – he was completely not in that match. And the moment that happened, he obliterated Popper in that set. It just happens like clockwork. As long as people hate that guy, like there's not one athlete that I can think of. And there's a ton that do this, but he does it the best. There's not one athlete in the world who – weaponizes hate to their advantage like Novak Djokovic does. No one.
Yeah.
Like, as long as people hate that guy in the crowd and want him to lose as much as they do for the last 20 years or whatever, 15 years, he will win slams. That's when he retires, is when people start to like him too much.
The greats find a way to get their motivation. His is, as you said, as you put it perfectly, he tries to weaponize hate and he doesn't. And look, I think he is well liked, and I think a lot of the fans in that match loved it. So I'm with you with maybe there is a conspiracy theory there, and I get getting behind your guy, and we all know a line that may or may not should be crossed. But at the end of the day, Popper used the crowd to his advantage, played well. Djokovic is at a point now where he's handled business. It hasn't been as crisp as he'd liked. He has Echeverry next, then maybe a showdown with Ben Shelton. So I think we're in the same boat, right? We're going to expect him to raise his level and master this two-week process, but the only caution I would say, Hubs, is this is an aging athlete. As great as he's looked, eventually, right, there will be a cliff. So where that is, who knows? It could be round four. It could be the final. It could be 3 years from now.
I'm not doubting him until he says goodbye. And then I'm not doubting it even then until he's gone for a year because I could see him just being like, I can still beat these guys. He's watching on TV. But sure, yeah, at some point, Father Time hits. He keeps track of his body like a temple. Like he is going to preserve himself the best possible way. Sure. He's wiping his nose. He's got a cold. I don't care about Novak Djokovic's cold. Like he's fine. Like that's not going to derail his chances of winning the Aussie Open. Yeah. The wrist thing, that could be an issue with, you know, that's a little ongoing situation here. I'll say this, and I'm sure we're going to get to him, but the way that Demon Hour beat him, the way that Demon looked against him at the United Cup was a little bit of a whoa. And I didn't know to take it as more of this is Novak really just going through the motions here of warming up for the Aussie, or has Demon really turned a corner here? Because he looks awesome.
Like
there's something going on there. You can see, and also a mental, you know, not necessarily that Novak has owned him. Like I think they barely, that was maybe their third career head to head or second or whatever. But Demon struggles in these big matches against big people. He always crumbles. To get that mental block, like that's not there anymore. Like you can now go back in a moment when you're in a slam or a 1,000 and he's in trouble, or he's, you know, neck and neck with it with a big player, he can now dial back to that United Cup moment of like, I've beaten Novak Djokovic in straight sets with the crowd going nuts and the people caring. So like, that's big for, I don't know. I think I'm taking more of that side than Novak, you know, just like out of sorts or whatever. He's probably doesn't care a whole lot about the United Cup, but Echeverry, he'll blow out. And then Shelton will be fun. And, you know, the media is trying to really, you know, bring back this U.S. Open controversy that Ben Shelton, to his credit, wants nothing to do with. And I haven't really heard of his dad since the U.S. Open, which is a good thing because I think his dad was getting a little too much. I'm sure he would on the side agree with that. But yeah, Ben doesn't want any part of this. Like, he's just like, yo, we're at the Aussie Open. What are we doing?
Yeah.
That was last year. That was last fall. So I think the whole, you know, that would be the first real like popcorn match. Like true popcorn match. I guess there's Korda Rublev.
Oh, I would maybe tonight's match though. But as we record this, because I don't know, it's a level down. But Draper and Tommy Paul is what I would consider a pretty good popcorn match.
That, that's more for us, I feel like, than like. Well, but like people will see Shelton Djokovic. Here we go.
I think Demon Hour from that side, it's fascinating too. It's also what you do. There's the letdown spot. We talked about it with just the other day here at with women's tennis, right? Garcia beats Osaka, emotional match, loses her next match. Demon Hour keeping it going, playing Arnaldi yesterday, who is a tricky opponent, losing six games. Demon Hour has been trying to get to that top 10 level. He finally cracked it. He has a lot of, you know, he's one of the fastest players on tour, and you think that maybe, you know, players do lose matches in Djokovic's sense. Like, there's no perfect season in tennis. So I'll give credit, as Djokovic did, to the player in Demon Hour. The Shelton side was interesting, too, because he played in Aussie yesterday, Hubs, and in that match, he had to raise his level. He had to find, and I don't even want to say it this way, but it's the only way I can think, like, find his emotions. He was a little low in that match early. O'Connell started playing pretty well, and then suddenly he had no other choice to raise his emotions. So I wonder with Shelton, you know, the focus is going to be there when he plays the best. If this is a pattern to watch, making sure he's emotionally invested in these matches against the quote-unquote lower-ranked lesser opponents.
Yeah, and I mean, that was the issue last year in non-slams, right? He was miserable in the summer. Like that U.S. Open run seemingly came out of nowhere with the results he was showing at all these lower events because he couldn't kind of get up for it and keep that consistency going. Does seem like he's turned a corner in that sense, and he looked very good. I felt like in the warmups to the Aussie. So yeah, no, that's always, I feel like that's across all sports though, is the letdown game.
Yeah.
You know, like just not taking your opponent too seriously and just, you know, the catching off guard and you know, the guy who's really impenetrable to that is Djokovic because he'll just realize, oh, I'm a set away from losing. I'll try now.
Well, okay, we were no spoiled problem. By the big three, right? Because those guys, and even Murray, too, to his credit, like they just got to every quarterfinal. So it's not normally like that. That also said, there's not a quote-unquote guarantee that he's going to get there, too, because Mannarino is a tricky opponent. I just want to circle that one because that's a 36-year-old now who's ranked higher than he's ever been in his life. And that is one where Shelton will have to be invested and engaged in. I think he should hit up his friend Chris Eubanks because he was the one guy that figured him out last year. So I would just say Mannarino is one that's not going to give. He keeps his racket strung so low. He doesn't give you any power back, and it's just a slog would be the way I would describe it playing.
He is the most frustrating, I think, athlete in all sports, Mannarino. Like when you're betting, when you have a bet against him, it's so you have no idea what's happening.
No.
You're just like, why haven't we won all these points? Because I first got one of my really good buddies into tennis, we called him the broken arm man because he just plays like he holds everything like he has broken. He does have, I think, a long-term arm injury that's why he kind of plays like he does. It has some sort of effect. Anyways, he's played great over the last like 12, 16, whatever it is, 16 months.
Yeah.
That is going to be tricky. I do like the gambling line for him was like minus 250, I think, Shelton. I think that's a respectful line. I was worried it was going to be a little lower. I think he'll be able to handle himself there. Now, obviously, it is a look ahead for
sure.
That's it. You have Novak. You have Novak. That is always dangerous in every sport. Yeah, I hope Ben gets through. It would be a real shame. No one wants to see Novak Djokovic against Mannarino. Like, come on. Sorry.
Don't you also think it's crazy we live in a world 6 months ago, even if we would ask this question, we live in a world where last night the feature match with other Americans playing was Ben Shelton. Like, Fritz is playing, no disrespect to him, higher ranked. Tiafoe's going, didn't work out for him. But it's Ben Shelton on TV, and we all were like, yeah, no-brainer. But that's just the star power and the ascent that he's had.
Yeah, I think it has to do with his youth. It has to do with the high mile power to serve, the flashiness, and more of like the potential. I think everyone sees the potential here. Like, we've seen everyone for a little bit here, all the Americans, you know, and they've kind of had their moment. They still do, of course, like Korda, Fritz, like absolutely. Yeah. But the meteoric rise of Ben Shelton is notable, and you know, ESPN is gobbling it up, and they want you know, people want to see Ben Shelton. He's the highlight reel. Like, he's the guy that, obviously not to the level of like Carlos Alcaraz, but like, he's going to make some, he's going to have some points, some winners that are going to be, jaw dropping that you want to see. So yeah, to their credit, they get it. That is crazy though. Of course, like, this is, you know, we're 2 years into this, a year into this. So yeah, credit to him for figuring everything out. And you know, you almost look at his ranking too, and it's like, how did he get this high this quickly? Winning, you know, going deep in the US Open certainly helped.
Yeah, the consistency will get there, but we know the ceiling. It's a big, you know, it's a big ceiling talk with him. Fritz has been the most consistent, but we see what happens every time he plays Djokovic. It hasn't gone his way. You think maybe Shelton could crack that. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for Tiafoe. I just want to say, last night, though, watched most of that match. Machock, however you pronounce his name, unreal player. Like, unreal match, at least. I'm excited to see where it goes for him, because the kid's like 21, just kind of got to the main draw level and was playing some old school 80s style tennis. Unfortunately for Tiafoe, though, Hubs, it's another early round exit in a slam and another setback for a player who has big goals in mind and unfortunately not able to hit them.
Yeah, he unfortunately seems like, you know, that deep US Open run he had is kind of it. I don't really know how much confidence they put in him at slams these days.
In New York, I mean, he made the quarters last year, didn't go well in that match against Shelton. But okay, I'm willing to put New York on an island. The other three, it hasn't. And I'm looking at the last, you know, last year's Grand Slams, it was the Khachanov match in Australia where he blew all those tiebreaker points and lost. Zverev at the French Open, a winnable match. Dimitrov, I think Francis would tell you, was his worst match of the year over 2 days against Wimbledon, and then the Shelton match at the US Open. So something is not clicking, and it is a testament to your opponent, but there are still those dips that are coming back in, you know, 5-10 minutes of uneven play at this level. You know, I mean, you can't give an opening to even the 70th ranked player in the world.
No. And yeah, I did actually bet Macaque. I did bet Thomas. I thought the line was really good. In the sense of that, it was not very high for Tiafoe. Like, there were red flags all over that match. Didn't expect it to go like that way. Like, he showed nothing. So he was flat the whole way. Yeah, and credit to Tom. Like, Thomas was flying. He was awesome. They're very young, talented guy that definitely could. I feel like his ranking doesn't justify like what he's cooking right now. So good for him. Guys like Korda, who's like seems like hopefully fully back from the injury at this point. You would hope when he's playing with confidence. I have him over Tiafoe, no doubt. He's just got to figure out the mental side. Once he masters the mental side, it may take a few more years, but closing matches is probably Korda's biggest issue at this point. Like, everything else is there. Tommy Paul is kind of the consistency that you don't see from Tiafoe. You know, I feel like it slams. Like, Tommy's making runs. Like, Tommy's getting there now. Tommy's stacking pretty solid deep runs in these slams, which is great to see. We'll see what happens to Draper tonight. That will be, obviously, you know, you when you're hearing this, you know what happened. Yeah. Unless the rain never stops. That is a very interesting match for Tommy. I'm very much rooting for him.
Were you Draper, man? And we talked about him just puking after beating Marcos Garon. I like both these guys, so I'm just hoping for a good match. I think both these guys, Draper has a ceiling, but his body had been letting him down. It was good to see him win a fifth set, but just yakking right away after. I didn't actually ask you, though, U.S. Open, speaking of Tommy Paul, you know, that thing with the fan, having his lucky fan on the outer court will him in, kind of showed you the growth and maturity and just how he's handling his ascent pretty well. But it was cool to see him hook up that little kid fan on the outside court that rallied and willed him on.
He knows how to play to the masses, I'll say that. Like, that's a quick way to get everybody on your side, you know, having him courtside. You know, I need him at the next match and all that, giving him those tickets. Sick. I think even the kid at one point was getting better tickets than what Tommy was offering him. So yeah, good for that. Hopefully he's back later this summer. But no, Tommy gets it, man. Tommy's cool. I think people really like his style and how calm and collected he is. He's the epitome of never gets too high, never gets too low. which is such a good way for an athlete, you know, a high level athlete to be at. Like, and you know, that guy's demeanor, that guy is breathing. His heart is always just the same level. Good for him. And yeah, he's getting better. The confidence coming to the net more. Like to see it. I hope I hope he takes it to Draper tonight. Sorry, Jack, but yeah, I like his I like his chances tonight. I really do. I think the easiest way possible Tommy could have won, I feel like, besides like a walkover, like he completely cooked, and the complete opposite for Jack, who obviously has the fitness issues. Good mentally, I think, for him to get through that match and get through it, I guess, is in quotations, because he puked his brain. You know, he could barely even shake hands before throwing up. And he's so talented. I think at some point he's going to master that and figure it out. It's going to take like 2 or 3 years. Now we're not there yet. But hopefully Tommy's getting him at the right time. I think he's 0-2 head to head. He just lost to him, what, 10 days ago, last week, whatever it was. Should be a good match. Hopefully a popcorn match, first real one. And it's not too late, as long as the rain has stopped. I haven't seen if it's stopped
yet. But. Yeah, still got some suspended graphics on my screen, unfortunately.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
More with Barstool Hubs here on Tennis Channel Inside In, talking 2024 U.S. Open. Want to bounce around to the women right now, because you said lines that, you know, the one line didn't make a lot of sense, had to jump on it because it was too low, too uneven. There was nothing more true to that statement than the Andreeva Jabeur line yesterday. I saw it in the morning, and I saw Andreeva as the favorite. We can put two and two together and see. Usually the odds makers know something. But Mira Andreeva, my goodness, like what she did, what she's doing at this age, how she's getting better. I'll put it this way, Hubs, and I'll let you expand on it. Beating Jabeur in thorough fashion, love in two, the number, you know, one of the highly seeded players. She was somebody we all thought is going to be a Grand Slam champion in the discussion for one of the best in the game within 2 to 3 years. And now I'm thinking that's too much of a long estimate. She's better than even I thought. We were heaping praise on her left and right. She seems like she's for real, and she's here already.
She is unbelievable. And I she's got this like stoicism to her. Like she can lash out a little bit. You know, she's 16. It's understandable. You're allowed to do that, but she got a lot of Coco to her, and like that vibe. There's a lot of Coco Gauff there. And she's terrifying, and the way she handled Ons, and man, I feel for Ons. I want Ons to succeed. I just don't know if it's there anymore. Like there is a mental, and I can't believe like the offseason didn't cure. This is just weird to see her this flat and this off. Right away.
Yeah. But
she might not be able. Like I don't know. She's going through a lot. She might need a little bit of a break here.
There were two, you know, distinct storylines / things you're hearing. One being the Wimbledon loss. You know, until she wins a major, if that never happens, I mean, that's something you don't get over this year, what happened and what that took out of her. The other thing is I don't think she's fully healthy. I don't think she had the full proper offseason. You were talking about how ridiculously short the offseason is. They played in that absurd WTA finals in Guadalajara in like October, and then you're already back at it already. I don't think she fully healed, and her level was a bit down, and we know it doesn't take much, especially at this level. Andreeva is someone that I expect to go in deep runs. There's certain areas of her game that she needs to improve, but youth on her side and what she can do. She's one
she
of the more.
She has a fun draw as well. Yeah. She should destroy Perry. Then you get Krejcikova, like her there. Mm-hmm. Krejcikova can be tricky, you know, it would kind of be in a backstop situation there, but I think Andreeva's got it. And then that sets up a little Sabalenka situation.
You're in week two then, and then it's, you know, once you're in week two, anything can happen. So,
yeah. Can we get Sabalenka? Sabalenka and Andreeva would be cool. Like, that's a match you circle, you stay up, you ruin your next day for it. Absolutely.
How, How would you put the Sabalenka, like, there's no one in women's tennis like her for a lot of reasons. The power is unmatched. She literally hits it as hard as the male players. It's crazy. We know the temperament can be up and down. She's been the most consistent major player in the sense for how deep she's gotten, but she either wins it or, you know, in spectacular fashion loses it. But in Australia, Hubs, how do you see it going? Do you think the pressure might get to her because she's defending the title, or is this a place of comfort given that she's won the major and knows she can do it here?
I lean more that once you get over that mountain, it's so much easier to climb back to the, like, so much easier to get back there. If she was still chasing a title, a slam, like, way different situation. I think there's way less focus on her then. Like, yo, if she's still without a slam, that's a storyline that you're going to see. You know, she could be warming up in the gym or whatever, and you're going to see, is Sabalenka going to win? And then that gets in your head. You don't see that because she won. So, like, I think that pressure is gone. Mm-hmm. And I think that's obviously going to benefit her big time. She's got an interesting match if she wins against Serzenko, because Badoza has taken this layoff and looks, she's one of the more surprising players so far here. It's Paula Badoza. I did not expect her to come back from the injury and look this good. And obviously, Anna Mazova
is well, that's the next matchup. And Annie Samova Badosa in the next round, not expected. Both players that have taken time off, been open about their mental struggles. Both have been either, in Badosa's case, ranked really high, number two in the world, or Annie Samova, a Roland Garros semifinalist. She's still only 22, which is just absurd to think about. So, and hard hitters as well. I think Sabalenka's draw, though, the one thing I keep coming back to with her is that she seems to get through to that quarterfinal, semifinal round pretty handily. That's when the tests come, when she plays better players and can get to her game a little bit, but it's going to take a lot. It's either going to, like, Rybakina is the only one that can out-hit her. Coco and Iga might be able to out-strategize her and be more versatile, but it's hard when you're not, when you can't have that elite level, one or the other. It's just hard to get to her.
I wonder, can we, Andreeva maybe, maybe be, well, did she, 16. There's firepower there.
Yeah.
And the way Anna Masova's hitting the ball, I don't know. Like, this is not a cakewalk for, like, Sabalenka, the look of this draw. And this is not supposed to be this difficult to just even get to the, you know, quarters. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't see her getting to the finals. Like, I think she's going to slip up in one of these. It's just, there's a lot of talent going at her right now.
Do you put Coco in that same category of someone that's done it and now the weight's a little bit off? Because yeah. I would just say
she hasn't looked great, to be honest with you. Like, it's a few slow starts, but she has reached the point now where I think even if she gets broken early, like against an inferior opponent, she's like, all right, I've done this before. I'm good now. So, yeah, I mean, winning the US Open, that changes her whole life mentally, you know, and all that comes with it, with the fortunes and the fame. But no, she's reached the point now where deep run should be automatic with her. Quarterfinals, semifinals, every single slam.
I feel like you could talk me into saying, would you bet on Coco against every top player except for one? And I'd probably say yes. But that's the thing. Like, if she has to play Iga in the final, we've seen how this goes 9 out of 10 times. But yeah, even Sabalenka, Rybakina, Pegula, given what she's done and the growth she's shown, and, you know, the serves looked a little better, I think that there can be ways for her, you know, I don't want to say comfortably, but have the hammer in those rivalries. But the Iga thing, and that's the beauty of tennis and styles making fights. Iga's got a problem of her own. Well, assuming she gets through this Collins match, she's in Ostapenko section again. And Yelena just finds a way to just disrupt all of our future plans and brackets.
She is, there's no words to describe that woman. She's just ridiculous in everything she does. And yeah, she is kind of a similar situation of, like, Tommy, Paula, Carlos. Like,
yeah,
that doesn't make a whole lot. Like, why? Like, Tommy, I love Tommy, and, you know, he's knocking on the door of top 10 status here. That guy being Carlos's kryptonite is insane. But it's like you said, styles make the fights.
Yeah, Tommy can cover the court as well as just about anyone. I think that's the thing that Carlos isn't used to. No one that can run down, make him hit that one extra shot, and cumulatively get there. Yeah. With Yelena, she Ostapenko just redlines. Like, it's hard to describe.
No, she just blacks out. She doesn't remember the match. Can't even tell her what shot she has. I won. Okay,
she's feuding with the umpire. She hates Hawkeye, all this stuff. You know, it's funny, too. She's playing tonight as we record this, Tomjanovic. And the last time they played in a major, some sparks went down. So I wonder if, I don't know if it's too, I don't know if it's trappy necessarily, because Tomjanovic's level hasn't been great, Hubs. But the fact is that the crowd's going to be against her. And that could be something to monitor.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're not wrong. But with Ostapenko, like, has there ever been one normal Ostapenko match? Like, tune into an Ostapenko match, like, oh, yeah, that was straightforward, no problem. That doesn't happen.
For all the you know, comments, jokes, and I'm cracking them as much as you are, but this is the best she's looked since she won that French Open in 2017. So yeah, we're talking 7 years. She's back into the top 10. And
there's consistency for sure that hasn't been there in a while.
I've always just thought when we handicap this, obviously Iga on the women's side has just, you know, been head and shoulders above, you know, on a consistency level. But Rybakina is someone that I thought in some weird way has floated under the radar, only as the one slam finished four in the world. And I watched that match against Pliskova, and I noticed the player that also shows zero emotions, like the opposite of Ostapenko and Sabalenka. But she fights in there. And, you know, it's little things like keeping your head in it that can give her that chance. So I would say Rybakina. I don't want to say necessarily I'm picking her to win the tournament, but she is somebody that has elevated herself into that what I call WTA Big Four level.
Oh, yeah. You see Rybakina on the other side of you, you get nervous. Like you were in for – you're going to need to play your absolute best game. The way she serves, like that, you can be having a good return game, but if she's having her normal serve, that doesn't matter. She's just going to ace you. She's going to win free points, and then she's eventually going to break you because your serve is probably not as good enough. So yeah, she's an absolute danger and never someone you want to play. You know what? It's pretty open, man. Like, and by open, I mean, like, there are, you know, it's not just Iga and Saba, and I like that. Uh-huh. Like, that is refreshing. And there's younger, you know, there's not so much no-name players as well. Like I keep saying her name, but Andreeva, like, and, you know, Anamosova would be crazy, obviously, to win it right now. But
why not? Yeah.
That is not an easy task whatsoever. You don't want to deal with that. And that's another thing is she's 16.
Yeah.
She's too naive to know the situation's going on here. Like, she's just playing the next person. She's not thinking about winning a slam. She's just like, I'm just going to annihilate you. they had her on the studio yesterday for the interview, and she's just so, like, she's very short. And obviously, that, you know, she's young and she's nervous in that situation. But, man, she's this, there's like a cyborg to her that is something you don't want to see when you're playing her.
So if I had to ask you across both tours, Hubs, who wins a quarterfinal first, or if ever, Pegula or Rublev, you know, the 0-8 streaks or whatever it is for both, and you had to, you know, bet, I don't want to say bet your life on it, but make a sizable wager. First,
if Novak's facing Rublev, and we don't, like, that's not something that's gonna go well.
Yeah.
This poor guy. I would say Pegula, because I think women's tennis in general is just more of a crapshoot, than men's. Like, I feel like, yeah, I would say Pegula. I would say, because if I know who Rublev can't beat and who he can beat, like, I feel like on Pegula's best day, she can knock down anybody. I don't know if that's the case for Rublev. I think if Rublev is on his best, he still needs a top five player to really, like, to be off a little bit. And I just think, I want Rublev to win because he's, like, I don't know. I don't like seeing Rublev sad. Rublev's sad face is depressing to see.
You said he was probably the most relatable person on tour, given how open he is about just how unbelievably frustrated this game makes him.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Anyone who hides their emotions in sports, spare me. Like, I love Tommy Paul, and I just said he doesn't get too high, too low. That ain't me. That's not normal people. We get mad. We throw shit. Like, we throw our arms in the air when someone hits an ace for the third time in a game. Like, I want to see that. So Rublev has that, and, you know, I relate to that.
He looked pretty good against Chris Eubanks in that match, getting the break each set, winning in straight sets, 6-4 across the board, and looking pretty reserved, too. He doesn't have to play Djokovic to win a quarterfinal match, but it would have to be Korda in the next match, followed by maybe Demonauer and Sinner. So that's, I don't want to say murderer's row, but that's earning your first quarterfinal win if it happens.
Yeah, Korda and Demonauer, even though we already praised Demonauer, beatable, like, certainly by a Rublev, you know, who has the speed to handle that. But then you said Sinner, and then
there's something with him where something's clicked, and I hate to say it like that because he was top 10 for a couple of years, but right there's a noticeable difference. It's not just beating Novak a couple of times, but he's put it together. He's winning efficient matches. He's raising his level. He's monitoring his body as well. Something's clicked, and it's probably not one big thing. It's probably just over time he figured out exactly how to hit the right buttons and be what I would say probably the number two favorite in this tournament if we had to handicap it.
I know he lost to him in Turin, when it mattered the most. But Sinner beating Novak in the round robin stage in that insane match that, like, I remember watching on my phone walking home from work and didn't even see cars coming because I was so locked into that match on my phone. But, like, winning that match with the crowd behind you, your boys behind you, that's something that can unlock another level for Sinner. And that's kind of something he was waiting for. And obviously he's beaten Carlos. And it does seem – he seems to be – when he plays Carlos – that is a complete coin flip. And almost, I would even say, a little – I'd even give like a 60-40.
He's got the edge. Yeah, he's got the edge like right now.
There's a little kryptonite there with his game, and obviously his game is one of the best in the world. But winning that group stage match versus Djokovic was big time.
It was huge.
And he seems to be carrying that over.
It was huge. He's – like, if he beats Djokovic in the semis, I know we're getting all the way down. God. If he beats Djokovic in the semis, I will pick him to beat, if it's Alcaraz or Medvedev, whoever. I think he is going to win a Grand Slam. That's the, you know.
That it feels like the safest guy to win their first slam this year, right? Like, just, it's got to
happen. Oh, yeah. I mean, the other.
It feels like it's time.
Yeah.
Come on, Yannick.
Oh, yeah. Wrapping up here with Barstool Hubs on Tennis Channel Inside In 2024 Australian Open taking off and taking flight into the second round still. A lot to discuss and digest. We've got Cam Norrie in a battle right now. Casper Ruud's fighting.
And I faded Cam today, so I'm really hoping he doesn't pull off this 5-set comeback that he's trying to do.
Hey, still a lot going. Yeah, we know that's happened. Still a lot of matches to be played, but look at Alex Mickelson up on Jiří Lehecka in the third. Split sets 1-1. So
yeah, about to win the third set. It looks like here a guy who I stared at before and I thought the number was too big, but I like how he's played lately is Klein against Zverev. Right now, like, something's going on in that match. But you know, this is silly to talk about on a podcast because you guys all know the results while we're hearing this. But if Klein wins, I'm gonna be mad about myself because I really wanted to take him to at least win a set and I just forgot.
There any other players we should get to? I have a few in mind I was going to jot down and discuss, but anybody else that's caught your eyes early, whether it's a top
I'll
player.
I'll rattle off a few here. Disappointments, Schoppo. I don't know what the hell's happened, but that guy just refuses, I feel like, to listen to his coach. The Berrettini injury stuff is very sad. It almost feels like we're nearing a retirement situation for him. I just don't think he can get his body right, and it's a shame because – when he was going right, he's one of the most fun grass court players there are because he just absolutely blasted by you and, you know, aced his way to a semifinal or a final. Murray feels like this is it, retiring. Yeah. The way he said, like, he doesn't think he didn't say that, but he said, like, he doesn't know if he's coming back to Australia. The way he said it feels like it's over, which is sad because Murray in Australia made a lot of memories for me. Like, that guy has a laundry list of that. Raonic, obviously – you know, same kind of deal as Berrettini. That kind of feels like it, despite the comeback. But we mentioned pretty much everyone else here. Adino Prismic.
That was,
I don't know, I think that was cool, man. And I've never really seen Novak embrace someone like that. I feel like that's going to do wonders for his confidence. And he did play great in that match. Like they were, and Novak saying he sees a lot of them. Like Novak hasn't said the things, he hasn't said that kind of stuff to Carlos, I feel like, that he said to Dino. And maybe that's just because Carlos, you know, you don't want to give him too much ammo here, and he probably thinks that. But the way he was praising Dino and the way he hugged him twice to the net, it was, I was like, what's him? Whoa. Okay.
It took Alcaraz winning Wimbledon for Djokovic to really start heaping the praises. Yeah. I think there might be something to the Balkan, Croatian, Serbian, like, you know, brotherhood maybe, why he's there. But it's true. I mean, the game was there, and you hope this kid who won Roland Garros Juniors last year keeps it going. The other name I had down here we haven't talked about, because he fought and looked a little better last night as that match went on with Tsitsipas. There's been so much made about his injury, his back, his serve. He went kind of back to the old serve, and he was in a dogfight against an Aussie, a guy in Jordan Thompson who'd beaten him before and gives him a match. But I was, I guess, pleasantly surprised that he was able to raise his level. I wasn't sure he had it in him, given the current form he was in.
Yeah, I agree. Good for him to get the W. This doesn't last much longer.
You don't think so, huh? Yeah.
I don't think physically he's in a good spot. I feel like the change of the serve is to kind of prevent himself, like, and kind of save himself from an injury. I could easily see him losing to Van Ash.
Well, that was another one on there because Van Ash, what he's been doing, and, you know, Arthur Fils has been the talk of young French tennis. Van Ash is kind of remarkable to me because not the biggest guy, obviously, has insane cardio, outlasts these guys. The Musetti match We were talking yesterday of matches to go see looking ahead before we knew. It was like day matches, court seven. Yeah, Musetti Van Ash would be fun. And that turned into this five-set France versus Italy war that kept going. And I think Van Ash could give Tsitsipas a match. I also think Mihajlovic could give Khachanov a match, who had to battle against Kovacevic to win that match. But Khachanov's an ultimate fighter, but I don't know. I don't know if this time of the year is tough, because what's the level like going into these matches where we know the heat's also a factor?
Yeah, I actually thought Kovacevic was going to give Khachanov a better, he did. I mean, he came out firing in that first set. Like, he was hitting behind him. He was being aggressive. His first serve was just not consistent enough. He did steal a set, which was cool. But yeah, Khachanov is a little bit of, I don't know, in slams, hard courts, this is a consistency to him there. Like that, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, he can make a little run here. With Van Ash, I actually felt, I made the decision that I talked about earlier in the podcast of, you know, do I want to ruin my day or not? Fell asleep after the third set there. I bet Van Ash. Waking up to a bagel in the fifth was pretty cool. I'll say that. Van Ash has a little bit of a check mark next to him for me. Whenever I see him, my eyes, you know, go up a little bit. He can definitely beat Stefanos with the way he looked.
Wrap this up with the other side of the draw, the heavy hitters there where you haven't really spent much time on. Carlos Alcaraz looking like he's in better form. Medvedev's played one match, lost the set, but rallied, got a retirement. You know, you could throw in Holger Rune, who's always an adventure out on the court. And then the other candidate I throw in there, he's playing some of the best tennis of his life, is Grigor Dimitrov, outlasting Fucsovics in a very physical match. But that group of four on the bottom side of the draw, you probably got to think a finalist is coming out of there. So how do you see that going?
I hope it's not Grigor, and that's not because I don't love him, but man, he just has zero chance to beat a Novak Djokovic. Like, he just doesn't. Mm. He sometimes lucks his way, I feel like, into getting there. And credit to him for he's been doing this for years now, like a long, long time, way longer than I feel like I thought. Like this level, I just don't think he has anything that Novak would get worried about whatsoever. I hope it's Carlos, because I always hope it's Carlos. Medvedev, though, has played obviously well. He's got the track record to do it. Holger as well. And Holger is a guy who doesn't fear Djokovic one bit. So that's a guy that I feel like Novak wouldn't want to deal with whatsoever. But with Holger, God, I always worry about him cramping. I just don't know how much his body can hold up. But it's been better lately, I feel like. Early on, I feel like it just wasn't. But, I mean, I'm taking chalk on the men's side, I think.
Carlos?
I'm a Carlos guy. I'm a biased Carlos man.
I think we could see Medvedev Joker again, just because, and not just because Medvedev beat Carlos in the U.S. Open, but it does seem like Medvedev's track record at Aussie is pretty good. He's had some brutal losses in the finals, but it's a tougher draw for Carlos than he would have hoped. And I don't know. And that's, yeah. Holger would be an interesting final, too, if he puts it together. He's someone that I don't think, you know, has the consistency, but when the A-level game's going, he's as good as anyone not named Djokovic.
Dude, I was at Rune's first matchup with Djokovic at the U.S. Open when he was a nobody. Like, well, not a nobody. Obviously, like, he was talked about, but, you know, he's playing Novak in the first round. He was nothing, and he blew me away. Like, he broke down physically in that match, but I remember being like, wow, that guy's something, and here we are. Like, he's really, really good now. You know, whether he can elevate his game to get to a, you know, slam final and beat Novak Djokovic, it's a whole different world. And I don't hate your take about Medvedev whatsoever. And I don't want to, there's only so many slam finals with Carlos and Novak left. You know, I don't know how long, I just want as many as possible. Yeah. So sorry for being greedy and just rooting for that, because anytime those guys are on, I know that people who don't watch tennis are going to wake up and watch that match. And I want that because I want the sport to grow. So, you know, shame on me for rooting for Carlos Novak. It's chalk. I get it. No problem. But that's the fireworks. Anything that's not Novak Carlos and we get really close to it and we're denied is a letdown. Just this.
Nothing wrong with rooting for the dream matchup. But the beauty of this sport is you never know. You just never know. You could see Ben Shelton crash the party. You could see Sinner break through, Medvedev and Holger. A lot of options. Eric Hubbs, Barstool Hubs, thank you for joining this show. Yet again, breaking down the Australian Open. Best of luck with everything. Staying up all night if you so choose, and your Draper Paul action as well. But and Cam Norrie too. Can't forget about, you know, rooting against him in this one. But always a pleasure talking tennis with you. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. See you soon.
That was Barstool Hubs on Tennis Channel Inside In. This podcast is on all your podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music. Search Tennis Channel Inside In. It pops right up. And check out the Tennis Channel Podcast Network by going to tennis.com/podcast. We have another show scheduled for this Monday. Double the shows, double the pleasure during the Australian Open. For Barstool Hubs, I'm Mitch Michaels. This was Tennis Channel Inside In. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the tennis. And I'll talk to you soon.